Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
Because if you push yourself to the point where you've thrown all your eggs in that basket and you go all in and you 100% commit, whether it's trying to make the team or going for the job, and you come up short, that is such a hard place to be in. To admit to the world, I wanted this and it didn't work out. Because you kind of have to realise then, that was my dream and it didn't work out. But it's almost like saying then, well, so what? Get another dream. But wouldn't you rather know? Wouldn't you rather know that you've chased it and you've gone for it and it hasn't worked out than sit there and wonder when you're 80 years old going, I wonder could I have done that?
Reading out Anna Geary's list of achievements is an exhausting task. It includes Cork Rose, All-Ireland winning Cork Camogie captain, coach on Ireland's Fittest Family, member of the Sunday game team, radio presenter and a contestant in Dancing with the Stars. But Anna can now add author to that list. She's just published her first book called Anna's Game Plan, which she describes as a practical toolkit to help people become more confident and be able to be more in control of their lives. And we talked a lot about building confidence and resilience during our chat, as well as what Anna has learned from the highs and lows of her remarkable career so far.
Did you hear about Micheál Muirthing? And I was like, no. And he's like, he has just announced his retirement from broadcasting. And I was like, wow. He looked up and he just said, imagine, that man has given decades to broadcasting and 1 hour with you and he decides to call it a day. Do people think I'm a bit much? You know, do people think that, oh, she's constantly always striving to do new things and try new things? Do people think that, oh, this one's got notions about herself? What drives me is that idea of, why wouldn't I say yes to Dancing with the Stars or being a coach in Ireland's Fittest Family or trying to, you know, if it doesn't work out. Yeah, it's bloody scary, but what's actually also scary is not having that courage to give it a go. And it's almost like I was getting it out of my system. And then...
Sorry, do you know what I'm getting from this?
No.
You're actually telling me you're even good at being defeated now. She's even good at this shit. Is there anything you're not good at? I tell you, I'm really good at accepting defeat.
I'm not.
Really good at that.
I'm not.
Actually, you know what? I'm the best at it.
I really...
Nobody's better than me. I had so many things that I wanted to talk about with Anna before we started this interview. And as happens with the best conversations, we ended up going down a totally different direction altogether, and a very enjoyable one at that. My full chat with Anna coming up very shortly, but because it's Anna Geary, there was obviously huge interest from the GAA community and beyond in the prospect of listening to this conversation, as the voicemails now reveal.
Hi, you've reached the Mario Rosenstock podcast. Please leave a message.
Fáilteoireacht, this is Micheál Muirthing. A big bowl of boss to you, Mario, for having Anna Geary on, the legendary Anna, Camogie All-Star Anna, and of course Dancing with the Stars Anna. Eg dousa con royalty. I remember commentating on Anna very well. Anna Geary and Dancing with the Stars takes to the stage. Anna from Cork, not a waltzing stronghold, but here she is with Fabrizio. Fabrizio dips her down. He snags her back up again. A beautiful New Yorkers. What a lovely spin. It's over the bar. Oh, but will the judges allow it? The judges say dance on. Dance on. Dance on.
Yeah, hi, this is Katie Taylor with a message for Anna Geary. Hi, Anna, this is Katie Taylor here. Listen, you're such an iconic sports person. I have such admiration for you. I've been watching it for years in the Camogie and that, winning all those medals for Cork. Listen, I wonder, have you ever thought about giving the boxing a go? I'm looking for an opponent in the Tree Arena in May. I think the two of us really draw a crowd. You know, Anna Geary versus Katie Taylor, battering the heads off each other. I know you're not a boxer and I know you need a bit of practice, but I'll let you use a stick and all if you want to have a go with me, okay? Give us a bit, call us back there.
Anna, Matt Cooper here. I used to love listening to you on the old block rocking beats there on a Saturday. But anyway, listen, we're looking for a bit of a new GAA pundit on The Last Word. Peter Canavan, the whole thing is getting a bit worn out, you know, yourself, between yourself and myself. Peter's old droll delivery, you know, half the time, you know, the Tyrone thing. You haven't a clue whether he's taking the piss out of you or not. But anyway, we're thinking of getting rid of him. Needs more cork, in my opinion, Anna. Give us a call. Thanks.
So we had the mics live as soon as Anna and I got into the studio. And as we got settled, we started chatting about Jack Charlton and Andy Farrell and the incredible impact that they have had on Irish sport. So let's jump in there.
With no ears and graces.
Maybe it's that.
Like, Andy Farrell is remarkably just like reserved for a guy that literally is so successful. Mm. And like even his son and everything, like there's no way.
Mm. The other one is that just about Charlton, I remember that this is interesting to talk to you about as well, because maybe it took people like Jack and Andy to almost come in to a place like Ireland and kind of tell us, you know, you are good enough. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm the best and I won a World Cup. Yeah. And I remember thinking, you know, obviously Jack Charlton won a World Cup winner's medal. But I remember thinking, looking back at Andy Farrell's career, and Andy Farrell was the absolute superstar of rugby league. Mm. Superstar. He was revered all over the world. And maybe these guys, they just have this easiness about them that they just come in and they go, no, no, you can win. You can do it.
Yeah.
He's like, can we do it? Yeah. We're Irish. He's like, you're brilliant. You're bloody
seeking
brilliant.
Approval. But we can't, that's a cultural thing though as well, I think, in Ireland. That we're constantly this like external validation. Are we good? Are we good? Tell us we're good. And we need to hear it. And I suppose like that when you have a standard bearer like that, that's saying you get the for the nod of approval.
Because it's just that little bit of confidence.
But it's the same even if you think about the likes of Roy Keane.
Mm.
Because he's such a standard bearer in this country.
Yes.
And if he gives you the nod and he thinks that you're doing a good job, well, you don't, you know, then you are.
Yeah.
You know, so I think people crave that from the people that have been there and done it.
They do, but it raises that interesting thing about England and Ireland again, you know, the little, the big brother and thing, you know, and they're seeking approval. And, and that thing, which I always associate with the 70s and 80s, where people would go, do you hear he's been over to England? He done well over there. Oh, well then, we'll hire him immediately. How much money do you want? We'll break the bank for you. I said, no, he was a bank robber. Oh, I thought you said he made it in England.
But isn't it
as a bank robber, for God's sake.
But isn't it kind of the same in some ways as well in media? Oh, you know, they're working.
You see,
they're working. BBC.
Oh, yeah, jeez. He was in the BBC.
You know, like you could be absolutely a trailblazer
now,
in Ireland.
It's only BBC 6 now at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, but
it's the BBC.
But you know what I mean? There is this.
I hear Tubberty's got to
we
the
have,
BBC.
Yeah, we have this idea.
Tubberty's got to England. Tubberty's got to England. We weren't good enough for him over here. Tubberty's in England.
Yeah, well, that's the Irish, you know, like pull you back too, though. Like,
yeah, but that's dying as well. We're waking up, you know. That's why you said we need to be giving each other validation and knowing that our own validation is as good as anybody else's and that we're as good at everybody else at doing stuff.
And often we see that in retrospect. We look back and say, yeah, actually, you know what?
Mm.
We could mix it with the best. And I think even with, like you're mentioning, the Irish rugby team, people are starting to realise that now, that they're mixing it with the best.
Yeah.
But you know, and we're so, I don't know what it is, but we're so quick to tear each other down, particularly in sport. You know, like, it doesn't matter what sport it is, your team could be riding on the crest of a wave and suddenly they'll go through a bad patch. And, you know, we're looking at the manager, we're blaming the team, we're blaming the selection. It could just be a bad patch, you know, and sometimes we're so quick to focus on that, whereas sometimes we need to take a breath and be like, actually, you know, this team didn't become bad overnight. It's just it's a rough patch. We'll be fine again.
We're troubling like that as a nation. And I mean, you've come from a very, very decorated sporting background, and I mean, you must have experienced that firsthand as well. You know, that kind of every so often you put your head above the parapet in Ireland, and I suppose people like to have a shot at you. Now, just before you want to go into this, I listen to a lot of UK radio, right? Mm-hmm. And apparently like they're like that over there as well, about their own.
Yeah.
They are. So maybe it's everywhere. I know they're not like that in America, because in America, it's like, it's almost imbued in you from the moment that you come out of the womb, that you're told, you can be an astronaut. And the kid is going, I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah,
and everybody goes, you go, Bart, or Brad, or Chad, or Chud.
And you hear them on the X Factor and the mother is bigging them up and then they open their mouth and they have the note in their head.
Yeah, whereas if you're in Anacarty in Tipperary and you go, I want to be an astronaut, you'll be lucky if you don't get the side of a hurl and the puck of the hurl.
Go on away. Go on away. With a chocolate bar, he'd eat himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Notions.
Yeah.
Right. So this is notions, right?
True.
So this is what I wanted to talk to you about, that I'm looking at your CV here.
Half it's made up,
It took me about 3/4 of an hour to read it.
Thanks, ma'am. She sent it in beforehand.
The amount of things you've done, right?
Yeah, especially you haven't done
there. You just haven't stopped, right? You're a machine, right? And, of course, as a person, as a fellow person who's ambitious and I like doing things, I would have great admiration for you. But I wondered, did you ever feel awkward at all in your development as a human being here in Ireland, that you were... You see, because I know, having talked to you once or twice and just seen you on TV and everything, You have a refreshingly kind of unashamedly, positively ambitious approach. Mm. Did you ever feel that that was a little tricky being in Ireland, behaving like that? Or not behaving, being like that?
I don't know if it was about being in Ireland. I definitely have found down through the years being a woman and being very competitive and being ambitious and being driven.
She's pushy.
Sometimes could be seen, yeah, or nearly ruthless.
Pushy, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know what it is, like, because often I've found, like, whether it's from sport, whether it is, like, doing the analysis of sport or broadcasting or whatever, you don't have that same commentary often around men. And I think I go back to my time in Dancing with the Stars, doing, we'll say, you know, media interviews around that time when you were in the thick of dancing. And often I'd be introduced as the competitive one. And I yes. sometimes would say, hang on a second. Like, you, the people that are on this show are like the likes of Nora Casey, like phenomenal businesswomen. Deirdre O'Kane, who's graced stages all over the world. You know, the likes of Rob Heffernan, who's an Olympian. And yet I get the tag of being competitive. Why? Because I'm a woman that's involved in sport.
He can't even run.
He can walk very fast.
Well, he can't, yeah, but he can't run.
Very impressive, very impressive. But I did find that strange. And I suppose what I think now, look, I'm 36. I'm a little bit older. I wouldn't say wiser, but we will for the sake of the podcast that I'm a bit wiser. But life experience as well has kind of taught me, actually, hang on a second. If I ever was to have a daughter, I would love her to be ambitious and driven and competitive. You know, and like, why is it seen as a negative thing? And like, that was, it took me a long time to be okay with that, because often I would feel, do people think I'm a bit much? You know, or do people think that, oh, she's constantly always striving to do new things and try new things? You know, and you would, I suppose, sometimes feel a little bit, awkward's the wrong word, but maybe feel, oh God, you know, do people think that, oh, this one's got notions about herself? Like, look, I come from a small rural community in North Cork, right? And they're so brilliant to be behind me. But, you know, a life in TV and radio was always, it was a dream. It was an aspiration. I never actually thought that I would get the opportunity to do it. And I remember, like, being in the sitting room watching The Late Late Show growing up and going, oh my God, look at Gay Byrne. Like, he gets to talk to people for a living, get paid for it. I'm getting in trouble in school for talking to the person sitting beside me. How can I make this my job like him? So it was always something I wanted to do. I never thought I would actually be in a position to do it. And I've kind of leaned in over the years. I've leaned into that ambition now and that competitiveness, because I realise, look, it's something to be proud of. And I got that from my dad. And, you know, my dad passed away 2 years ago. And now actually it's something to be really proud of, because I'm reminded of him when I have that kind of competitiveness, like even in Ireland's Fittest Family, when the ref says 3, 2, 1, go, I forget this TV cameras. Literally the competitive nature takes over and it's like, okay, I want to do this. I want to win this. So now I'm more appreciative of it. But definitely in the past, I suppose sometimes you could be made feel that you're a bit much. Yeah. God, it's a bit full on.
Yeah. Well, great. Brilliant answer to that question. I could have all summed it up though by going, and that pisses me off.
Yeah.
About
true,
Ireland,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and I
true.
Think we're growing up a little bit, yeah. And I think we're getting beyond it, and I think we need to move faster to get beyond it, you know?
Yeah. But happy
a competitive enough. Woman is so brilliant for me to.
But it's not ruthless as well, because, like, I mean, some of my best friends are players that I've played in opposition down through the years. So there's sometimes we marry the two, being competitive and being ruthless. They're very different, and I think being applauded for being ambitious and competitive should be a really good thing for men and women.
It's the same in. And, you know, I know there's hardly anything you're not involved in, because we can get to this later. But it's the same in, let's say, the sex stakes.
This is taking an interesting turn.
The attraction stakes where, like, you know, I mean, women who are seen as being, you know, actively proactive, let's say, in getting men. And going after multiple men if they want to, and having casual relationships with men, you know, used to be seen as sluts.
Oh yeah.
Whereas your man was seen
high-fived.
As oh, absolutely, he's the bro,
man about the town,
bro.
Yeah.
And you know, and
the legend,
and hopefully the legend.
You know, but you're right.
Legend.
Yeah, yeah. High five. Oh, go on, you legend.
Go on, you legend. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean. You know, so I see that changing as well.
Yeah, like,
and I see the equalisation of the sexes a bit more in that regard.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, I have friends that had, you know, without spilling information about them, there's some of them here now that they're terrified going, if she mentions my name.
Yeah.
But they had no interest in long-term relationships. They were, you know, in their 20s, they were loving life, they were just as much as our male friends. And like, and there shouldn't be any difference,
yeah.
You know, and I think that is slowly starting to change, and we're seeing it even in lots of different roles that people take up. Like, even this idea of, like, gender and gender balance and all that, and like, I'm all for that once the right person's getting the job. Because that really, I don't think there should be any tokenism, because sometimes what ends up happening then is the women that are in those positions, because they're skillful enough or talented enough or experienced enough, are often just saying, ah, she's only in that because they need more women in that organisation. And that's wrong too, because it nearly gives a bad name to those women that have fought really hard to get there. So I love the idea of gender balance, but to me, first and foremost, it has to be about the talent and the right person, I suppose, for the job.
Yeah, that's right.
That has to be the way it goes.
So I'm not asking you this question as a woman, right? I'm because I wanted to establish that before I asked you this question, because I'm interested in various different people, what might drive them like this. But why are you ambitious? And I'll open up the question slightly by going, why are you ambitious? Do you think, first of all, have you ever thought about it? Are you ambitious because you want to do better for yourself? Are you ambitious because you want to, let's say, to use that expression, old Irish expression, to get on? Are you ambitious because you want to be noticed? Are you ambitious because you want to beat other people? Are you ambitious because you feel like that you want to fulfill or discover potential within yourself that you don't know you have and want to find out if you have it? So have you thought about that at all? Or?
I'm listening to what you're saying. And being very honest, I'm probably saying yes in some way to all of those things. You know, because, look, for a long time, even when, you know, I got the good grades, you know, I tried to be good at sport.
You were good in school?
Yeah, I was good at school. And again, it was going back to, I was driven and I wanted to do well in
early.
Class. Yeah.
Your dad.
I think, I don't know, maybe it does stem from that idea of, you know, the good girl mentality, you know. Do your homework. Don't get in trouble at school.
Please, daddy.
Yeah. Please, mammy and daddy. And, you know, bring... And, like, and it wasn't... It was weird because I suppose there was never any pressure from them. But I think it probably was a pressure from within me to, you know, to be the best. And I think, to be honest, when I was younger, trying to be the best and, you know, that idea of perfectionism probably was a massive stumbling block for me. Because, you know, not everyone can be brilliant at everything. And I hated not being good at things. I'll actually give you an example. I remember going to Irish college in secondary school, in second year, and we had a volleyball competition. I'd never played volleyball before. I'm kind of vertically challenged, like I'm 5'5". So there was girls around me and boys around that were a lot taller than me, so more suited to the game of volleyball. I feigned an injury. Can't believe it. Like, I actually had no idea we were going to be going down this route with chat. But I pretended I had a sore wrist because I was like, I've never played before and I probably won't be good. So I won't play. Like, when you think about it, like, I was only about 14 years old, but the fear of not being good completely took over and it actually took away from the enjoyment part of it. And I think a lot of people we all have a little bit of that in us, that especially as we get older. You know, as kids just do stuff for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
They'll try cartwheels, they'll try riding a bike, they'll try rolling down a hill.
Well, they discover competitiveness pretty early though.
Yeah, well, I suppose that often comes though from your environment and the people that you're around as well. But it really did first and foremost come from me. Now, my dad was very competitive and he did always push me to try and be the best and be the best that I could be. But I suppose it definitely came from me.
What did he say to you? Else.
Oh, like my dad had an excellent way of encouraging me. Like, he was my number one fan, but he wouldn't say it to you, like, in a real obvious way. You know, I don't know, is that a quintessential Irish man? How did I do that? Oh yeah, you know, you're all right. You're like, more. I need more.
You need more.
Yeah, exactly. And so you tell me almost, more.
And
that's
your. And he wouldn't. He'd be reserved.
No, he'd be like, yeah, no, you were. But what were you doing there halfway through that second half when you ran up with the ball and you tried to put the ball over the bar from 50? Shouldn't have been doing that. But Dad, I got 6 points and I got player of the match. Ah, yeah, but you shouldn't be doing that now. You should pass that ball in. And I think, like, I don't know, is that an Irish thing again going back, that, like, just trying to keep me grounded? I remember going back even in, was it 2010? I've been involved with the Cork senior camogie team since about 2003. So I came on when I was the Cork under 16 captain, and, you know, you're in a dressing room. I was a child amongst women. I was just delighted to be there, and got onto the team in 2005 in my leaving cert year and had won a few All-Irelands. Things were going well. But in 2010, it was the first time I'd never been involved in an All-Ireland. Because we had always, Cork had always got to All-Ireland finals. But I got the opportunity to co-commentate with the legend, like Micheál Muirthearthaigh, who had been the voice of GAA for me growing up, you know, and he was always on our kitchen at home. And I remember, like, the following week, I came down and home to Cork, and I was met my dad in the kitchen, and he was reading the newspaper, and I was like, "Dad, like, you know, how do you think I did? Did you tune into Radio 1 to hear me co-commentating?" And he kind of just lowered the newspaper so he could just see his eyes, and was like, "Yeah, they were just so deadpan." He's like, "Yeah, yeah, you did all right." Back to reading the paper, and again, he was that. No, I want more specifically. What did you enjoy? Tell me. And it goes like that younger person. Tell me how good I was. And he obviously like copped on that I was looking for praise, and he was thinking, "You know, this girl's her first ever broadcast. I need to reel her in here now a small bit." So he had said, "Did you hear about Micheál Muirthearthaigh?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "He has just announced his retirement from broadcasting." And I was like, "Wow." Instantly, I felt a bit smug because I was thinking I was one of the last people ever to co-commentate okay, yeah. live with Micheál Muirthearthaigh. And my dad almost like sensed that. Mm. So he looked up and he just said, "Imagine that man has given decades to broadcasting and 1 hour with you and he decides to call it a day." But that was looking back now. I remember at the time I was nice highly one. Indignant. But at yeah. the time, like that was his way of just keeping me grounded, saying, you know, well done, but you know, you've more to do, you've more to learn.
Yeah.
And I suppose now I understand that. Like, and I understand that that was his way that he, you know, you really had to, I suppose, earn the praise. But then when you knew, when you got it, it was real. Because I think sometimes, you know, we're around people and they tell you you're amazing, they tell you you're great, but do they actually mean it? Like, I think it's really nice to have somebody that mightn't be as forthcoming with praise, but it's genuine then when you get it. Like, mm. we need those kind of people in our circles as mm. well. You know, I think that's, it's important to have those, because otherwise praise kind of gets...
empty. I don't,
yeah, and diluted nearly, mm. you know?
Yeah, well, that would answer a question about... It's there's only a couple of people you really, really, really want to hear from.
Mm.
And that's not to say that you don't really feel grateful for other people's praise and respect, but there's only a couple of people you really want to hear it from.
Yeah.
And we all know, each individual of us knows who they are in yeah. our own lives.
But not everyone does, Mario.
Not everybody what?
I don't think everybody knows those people. They don't often seek out the people whose opinions they might value, but they don't actually often ask their opinion. And I don't know, is that for fear of what would be said to them mm. or for fear of what that person will think if you ask them, you know, would you mind, you know, for me, listening into a radio interview to see how I do, or would you mind going to one of my talks? Or and I've had to do that in the last few years because, again, I suppose like that, it's the need in me to want to try and improve and get better. But sometimes knowing that I'm getting that feedback can be hard because, you know, some of it would be good. But there'll be some of it as well that'd be like, you know, the room for improvement on your mm. card at school, you know, mm. like good, but could be better. You know, yeah. like you have to have that feedback as well. Yeah. And I've asked people in the last number of years to do that for me. But I think often we're afraid to ask those mm. people. And mm. somebody said something to me a few years ago and it really stuck with me as well, especially in the world now of online and social media. You know, if you wouldn't ask for somebody's opinion, why would you care about their criticism?
Mm.
And it's kind of, especially I suppose when, you know, often I would be in the public eye and you'd have people sometimes doing a running commentary, and it is important for me to remember that too. You might mm. see your name and I don't go looking for it. So it's ignorance is bliss. But there are people sometimes that will have opinions of you, but I have to remind myself, I'm like, you know what? You don't know that person. They're mm. a stranger to you. You don't love and respect them. You're not going to be looking for their opinion. So it doesn't really matter what they say. You know,
and their agenda isn't even always about you.
Yeah.
Their oh, agenda very is most often is. About themselves.
Yeah, and you can't
and they're
often,
using you as another way of promoting themselves.
Right? Yeah, that's a good point. And my nanny used to always say, what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yes, exactly. I've heard that one. And also, it's from your perspective or from even my perspective about people criticising you in comedy or drama or anything mm. like that, and they're writing a bad reviewer about you or something. And you can be take the... And I mean, believe me, it takes... You can be very upset by those reviews, yeah. you know, until you realise, among other things, that part of their job is to write the bad review. Their job isn't to write a good review. They write their job when they get their job. They go, oh, I'd like a job, please. What are you going to be? I'm going to be a theatre critic. So you know what the gig is here. Yeah, I'm going to slate everything. Pretty yeah. much, and everyone,
yeah.
and the odd time I'll say something is really good.
It'd be flavoured.
Oh, but if I've done three good ones in a row, I'm definitely going to slate the next one.
But you have a system or a process that you go through. If you now, I'm sure you would never get bad reviews anymore. But do you have a process that you would go through to kind of deal with that?
It's quite primitive. Okay. First of all, I have no problem. First of all, I would be hurt by it.
Okay.
And I would take a while to work through it.
Yeah.
And I generally find going for a 1 hour long walk really helps.
Okay.
Because I think you can walk off nearly anything.
I agree.
And I think surprising things happen to your, surprisingly good things happen to your brain and your body when you walk. I think a lot of good things happen. I'm not exactly neurologically sure what they are, but I know they happen because I've been doing it so long that, or even go out for a vigorous tennis or something like that, or play some, get your mind into another place. Yeah, but no, I find it hard to get over with. And listen, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go, ah, grasshopper, I have found the secret to overcoming bad criticism. You must rise above.
Yeah.
I don't rise above it. Yeah. I'm sorry, I haven't and I won't. What you do is you get a bit more used to it and you just go, you know what? I'm doing exactly what I love in life.
Mm.
Toughen up.
Yeah. And as you said, you have to take the bad with the good sometimes because you do love what you do.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really refreshing
That's the most important thing.
Mm.
That's the most important thing. I've just got criticised there. And you go, okay, tomorrow's chip papers.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, I get to do what I love.
Yeah.
Every day. And I do. So, and that would be, I've always tried to get that in anything I'm talking or interviewing people about. Do what you love.
Yeah.
Do what you love. And I think it was, do what you love. I think Jim Carrey said this. He says, go for your dream.
Mm-hmm.
Go for your dreams. I know it sounds cliche. He said, go for your dreams. Go for your number one dream.
Yeah.
Because he said, it's very possible if you settle for second best, you may fail at that as well.
So true.
And then how do you feel?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it was never really what you wanted in the first
place. No, you didn't even want it and you failed at it. Oh, you know what? I'm going to do, I forget this rock singer, rock star business. I'm going to become an accountant.
Yeah.
And you're refused from every firm, KPMG.
Because you could never balance the books.
No, you were no good. You never balance the books. You lost your mind. So,
but
so,
isn't there, I think
so there's... Go for being a rock star. And you know what you'll end up doing? If you're not a rock star, you'll end up having music in your life all your life, and it'll be the love of your life, and maybe you'll find it, you'll be earning money another way, but actually music will be the love of your life.
Yeah.
Go for being a rock star, because if you don't become a rock star and you have music as, don't have the music as love of your life, you may become an A&R man in a record company because you've always admired talent in music.
Mm.
Maybe you will, but go for your dream.
Mm.
You know, go for your dream, do something you love, that thing you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
But anyway, listen, back to you, because okay, I'm trying to keep the ambition and competitiveness, all right, and all that.
It's so funny because I did not think that we were going to be talking.
Neither
about this
did
today.
I. Neither did I. I didn't write down talk to her about me. But I get a vibe off somebody, and I see if maybe they'd be interested in going down that route. But what I wanted to ask you was, people listening to this podcast and people seeing you on television and listening to you on radio. There's no point in denying this, Anna, because people will just go, Jesus Christ, she has it all. She fucking has it all. She's good looking. She's successful. She won multiple All-Irelands. And I said it took me 3/4 of an hour to read your CV. She was the Cork Rose, the Cork Camogie captain, the Cork Rose, coach on Ireland's Fittest Family, part of the Sunday game team, radio presenter in Today FM, a contestant in Dancing with the Stars. And it's not as if you were sort of dumped out of all those things. You kind of succeeded at all of them. So you're ambitious and you're competitive. But maybe I'd be more interested in asking you is, have you ever lost? Have you ever felt something isn't working out for me? Or I felt, and how did you deal with that? In other words, a person listening to this thing will go, she's just always successful. And I know they are thinking that because people have, they generally only see your bits where you're successful and they go, she's successful again. She's starting to annoy me now. This Cork Rose, Cork Camogie, Captain Cork, that's it with that. Blah, 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 blah. Does she ever fuck up?
Yeah, loads.
Right. Yeah, well, talk to me about that and maybe talk to me about that and talk to me about how you deal with it or how you dealt with it or how you felt about it.
Yeah. Like, look, when you come from a world of sport, you mess up every single time, every single game. I've lost lots of All-Irelands. I've been at fault for sometimes when my team has lost, you know. Like, I've been dropped from teams, and that's just sport. You're not even talking to the relationships that didn't work out or the jobs that you didn't get. But even if we just kept with sport, like, you know...
Are you the type to blame yourself when a relationship ends?
Yeah, I probably, and it's the same when my team would lose, I would be like, oh my God, if only I hadn't messed up that ball, or I hadn't, you know, left my player off with that score. Like, it would be, and I probably would overthink things and like sometimes ruminate on that. And especially when I was younger, you know, you're that critical voice, geez, it would be up, like, heightened. And I suppose in lots of ways, the critical voice has probably helped me as well over the years too, you know, because it kind of shines a mirror sometimes of going, well, you know, this is where you currently are and you don't like to look at it. And maybe you were at fault for that match that you lost. And maybe that's an opportunity for now to, you know, take some feedback from it and see how you can improve. But like, one of the things that I have done over the years, anytime things haven't worked out, is almost I've allowed myself to be disappointed. I think that's, you know, and upset and cry and scream and shout profanities in your car. Can't believe that person got this over me. That's okay. Because I don't know, is it maybe a thing where we're, like, it didn't work out, but stay positive and keep going. Being positive all the time is bloody exhausting. So I think...
you raise a very interesting point there. We live in a culture where, yeah, which seems to encourage relentless positivity.
And it's very toxic. Mm. And I've definitely found that, like, I would consider myself in the most part to be a positive person. Mm. But shit has happened to me in my life. Mm. You know, bad things have happened, you know, really difficult things that I wish I haven't had to go through. Like, I've, you know, I've gone through the loss of my dad and my brother. You know, I've even, and that's only in the last 2 years, there's plenty of other things we could go through that haven't worked out.
And he was terribly young, the brother.
Yeah. And like, you know, it just, everyone's got stuff, Mary. Like, everybody's got things that they're going through, whether it's a crap breakup or like a job that they wanted to be since they were really small, and then, like you said, you finally get to it and you're like, actually, I'm not good at this, or I don't like this anymore. Or maybe it's, you know, a relationship that you pinned all your hopes and dreams on, the person didn't turn out the way you wanted them to be. Everyone's got things. So it's like you said, it's how do you cope with them. And the first thing is, it's allowing yourself the space to cry and to get upset and to be disappointed. And I do that, and I would have done that for years. Even after matches, I probably would have been, you know, low in myself and upset, and my mood wouldn't have been great. And it's almost like I was getting it out of my system. And then,
sorry, do you know what I'm getting from this?
No.
You're actually telling me you're even good at being defeated now. She's even good at this shit. Is there anything you're not good at?
I'm plenty.
I'm really good at accepting defeat.
I'm not.
I'm really good at that.
I'm not.
Actually, you know what? I'm the best at it.
I'm really.
Nobody's better than me. I'll tell you, there was a girl once and she got beaten a few times. She was all right at it. But I was better. I'll tell you how I was better, Mario. I let it all out. I bawled my head off. And then I went out and I had a relationship. And this fella, I pinned all my hopes and dreams on. And it didn't work out. And I bawled my fucking head off, Mario. And I said, I'm the best at being defeated.
I wish it was that simple. But it is something that I do, and it does help me. You know, my God, it doesn't get to the bottom of it. And, you know, it really doesn't. But I have found, unless I allow that emotion out, it kind of builds up in me. And then, you know, like when you catch your jumper on the door handle one day and you've had a crap morning, yeah, and then all of a sudden it's like, ah!
Yes, I know that.
That's because you haven't, you know, whatever thing that's gone on that day,
yeah,
you
kind of,
yeah, exactly. And that's the small, tiny thing then that's been one thing
too many. You're essentially saying, let it out, be human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And allow yourself to wallow a bit, and allow yourself to, you know, to sit the fact that the job's gone, you know, like tits up, for want of a better
word. Have you ever sat on a sofa with a large tub of ice cream, mm-hmm, just shoveling it into your mouth?
Yeah, and that's on good days.
Have you though?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, Doritos?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what?
Chips.
I have never
battered
met
sausages.
A calorie I didn't enjoy.
Right, well, I want to know the bad ones. Tell me the bad ones.
Oh, what?
You're in an absolute funk of a wallow mood now. What's Anna loading up on?
Pizza.
Yeah, what flavours?
Ham and pineapple, don't judge me.
Right, that's a GAA pizza.
Do you think so?
Yeah,
a lot of people go, pineapple on a pizza? You're trying to be healthy or what?
I heard Micheál O'Mara say it once. It was on the thing. He was there like, Sean O'Gahalpin, he has the ball. He likes ham and pineapple on his pizza. That isn't really.
Well, I'm in good
that's
company
a Fijian,
Sean
that's a Fijian pizza.
Yeah, we're very exotic. Notions when it comes to pizza toppings. Yeah, pizza, ice cream, chocolate. I really don't
just
discriminate.
Failing gloriously on the couch.
And I really enjoy every bite of it. Like, yeah. And I, like, look, I think often people...
But I guess what you're saying is it's important. You said it already a few minutes ago. It's important to be who you are, but then it's how you deal with it.
Yeah. Mm. And I'm saying this now. I feel like this is almost therapy for myself. not always being in the rat race to be productive. Like, if you think back even to a few years ago, do we dare say the dreaded lockdown word? You know, lockdown nearly became a productivity contest. You know, the banana bread, the 5Ks in sub 20 minutes.
I saw you won that as well.
I didn't.
No, in 2020, no. You won the 2020 Irish banana bread making contest.
Oh, I didn't. My husband would be like, she can't bake a banana bread.
The Zoom bingo contest.
I might have been the person eating the banana bread. I wouldn't have been the person making it. And I definitely wasn't the person running the 5Ks because I'm not genetically designed to run long distance. I'm more of the sprinter. Anything less than 200 metres, anything after that now, I'd be like, no, into the nearest ditch.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, it's giving yourself that time, I think, to press pause. And I'm trying to do that. Yeah. And I, you know, and I think it's important and it's a work in progress. And geez, answers on a postcard if you know exactly how to do it. But
I learned something in the last couple of years through no reason. I didn't, it was just, I just came across a thing that I started telling myself. And it's to deal with difficulties that you might have, or just a bad day, or a bad week, or a bad period even, which is like, you know, a little longer, you know, where you're going through something a little longer. And it was, I think it was just fairly, very simple expression I heard somebody say, but it really is useful. And it went, try and be your own best friend. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it would be like to be your best friend and do all the things that your best friend you think would do for you.
Mm.
I think that's a really nice one, because then you can imagine you be yourself and you go, what would my best friend do for me if I was my best friend?
Yeah.
So be your own best friend.
Mm.
And that helps a lot, because you can almost keep yourself company when you're...
When and that's the relationship, isn't it? That, like, more than anything else, that's the person we spend the most time with, is ourselves.
Yeah.
And as even...
Die alone, you're born alone and you die alone.
Yeah. But, you know, you do, you spend a lot of time, and I suppose I have spent a lot of time in my own company down through the years, and I've realised as well that sometimes I don't talk to myself in the way I would talk to my best friend, because if I did, she wouldn't be my best friend anymore. I can be really critical.
Mm.
And it's about catching that now, you know. And one of the things that I do, you were asking earlier on, is if I do find myself starting to spiral into a really negative thinking pattern, I'll actually, often it's just something simple. Hang on a second now. Is that a fact? Take, for example, like last weekend, I had my book launch. And during the week, I was really nervous. And I was like, my husband sensed it off me. He's like, what are you really nervous about? Really nervous that no one will show up. I felt like it was the 21st all over again. You know, like, what if nobody comes?
Mm.
And then I had to be like, when I heard it out loud, I was like, that's ridiculous. Because, you know, if nobody else shows up, my friends and family are going to be there. So that's actually not a fact. So what you're worrying about isn't a fact. And I think if all of us did that and we found ourselves spiraling into a negative, it's like, is what you're thinking a fact? And sometimes that's all you need. And the distraction thing is really good too, like going out for the walk. I find exercise is really good to distract myself when I'm in that kind of
headspace. You've raised another thing there. My wife, Blonnet, is really into, and has been for years, into the concept of stoicism.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of a like a bunch of little laws that people kind of look at, and kind of ways to live your life, which are kind of really helpful.
Mm.
You know, and one of their chief things, Stoics, is you do not try to be worried or control the things that are outside of your control. Mm. It goes back to what you said. You can only control what you can do about something. You can't control today if it's going to rain or whatever, or things are going to happen to you. You can only control what's in front of you and what you can do, you know. And that's this famous principle about the Stoics is all about the obstacles in front of you are actually the way. It's the way. The obstacle is the way. It's everything that is an obstacle is actually your way forward in life. Yeah. They're not going to stop you. They're going to propel you on.
Yeah.
And that's it. So it's a way of flipping.
I remember seeing, you know, one of those things that was probably printed on some sign. It's like your obstacles are either stumbling blocks or stepping stones.
Correct.
And
that's the essence of the Stoics. And the Stoics are thousands of years old. Did from the Greeks and all that sort of stuff. So listen, you have a book, right? And you're talking about the book launch, Anna's Game Plan.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, I just read a little bit of the blurb about it. And it's a game plan for, it's not a self-help book.
No.
It's exactly, but it's a practical toolkit to help you become more confident and more in control. It sort of lays out 5 practical traits: acceptance, purpose, consistency, challenge and kindness. If I said those 5 words to you individually, would you give us a little bit on them?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so acceptance.
And first of all, let me just start by saying, when I wrote the book, it was probably singly the greatest challenge that I've ever, ever experienced. Because I was so far outside my comfort zone. Like, I really was. Like, you know, I'm not an author. I'm not a journalist. No, you know, writing a book and actually putting everything down. And like, I had such imposter syndrome and such self-doubt and insecurities. And I would write things and rewrite things. And, you know, my husband would say, I can hear you thinking. In the middle of the night. Because I'd be like,
he's so romantic.
I know, yeah. I can hear you thinking. What are you thinking about? Like, I just need to get up and rewrite that page. Honest, I'm not joking. Like, yeah, romantic, no. But it was such
would you ever stop competing, woman? I have to get up in an hour.
I'll be up before you. No, it's like, it was a really big undertaking. But genuinely, right, why I wrote the book. Yes, the competitor in me wanted it to be great. The ambitious person wanted it to be a bestseller. But why I genuinely wrote it was because I wanted to help people. Because a lot of people can feel stuck in their lives. They can feel in autopilot mode. They can live their life according to other people's idea of happiness or success or fulfillment. And we kind of go along with it. And social media plays a massive part in that as well, because this idea of perfectionism is nearly put up there as attainable, and everyone feels the pressure to be brilliant at everything. And, you know, people can have confidence knocks in for lots of different reasons. And when I wrote it, I was always mindful that this is a book that I would have loved to have read when I was, you know, in my teens, in my early 20s, even a few years ago. So I was always like, okay, well, I want it to be practical. I don't want it to be preachy. I don't want it to be telling people what they should be doing. I'm saying, look, if you need a helping hand in your life to navigate whatever you're going through, here's things that I use. So the behavioural sciences are in there in a really easy to understand way, because it's not just Anna Geary's opinion. It's there is the science in there. But I apply my own stories to and things that I've done in my life that have worked out, or maybe they haven't, because I want people to know, like you just said, oh, it's easy for her to say that.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I didn't know she went through that.
That's kind of
and that
what
was
I'm
important
at.
For me to, I suppose, just to connect with people and also make them realise there's lots of things that I've gone through as well that people might be surprised to know.
Yeah. Okay. Will I go through the other words?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Purpose.
Oh, yeah. So, well, actually, I didn't even answer your question about acceptance. Mm. The thing about acceptance is, to me, everything starts with acceptance. You know, whether that's accepting where you are in terms of your fitness.
Honesty.
Yeah. And it's kind of sometimes
self-honesty.
Yeah. And we look ahead all the time for our goals. We learn that's the end goal. But like, we're often not taking a stock of what the starting point is.
Yeah.
What's the current picture?
Yeah.
And it's really bloody hard sometimes to accept where you are.
Yeah.
Whether that's.
But refreshing.
Yeah. But
I've done that in my own life, and I haven't been happy with my answer. And
but
I go,
it is really
but after 20 minutes, even you're there, geez, I'm glad I do that.
Yeah.
I feel better
but
now that I know.
If you don't really kind of get a picture about where your starting point is. Like, if you want to run a half marathon, but you actually go out for a run and realise you can't even run 1K without stopping, well, that's your start point, is trying to run 2K. It's not trying to run the half marathon, because people often will have goals, and I'm the same. We'll set a big goal that's too big for us, and then we're almost setting ourselves up for failure. But that's because we're not really aware of where we are at the moment.
Yeah, I think, this is so good, but I think little wins in life are really important.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, little wins.
Yeah.
You know, that you're constantly giving yourself little wins and rewards for little wins.
And in sport, I would have always done that. I would set myself up at the start of a year. Like, you have your collective team goal to win the All-Ireland. Mm. But personally, if you're in the middle of January and it's mucky and it's raining and it's cold, you're like, why am I here?
But you're out there.
Yeah.
That's
but
one.
But then it's like, okay, well, I want to try and get a little bit fitter or faster. Mm. I want to try and get my place in the team. I want to try and, you know, I want to try and be the best version of myself. Maybe get nominated for an All-Star. Maybe, you know, do something that I didn't do last year.
Yeah,
it's setting yourself little milestones. But
here's
the thing though, Mario. I think some people, when you set yourself goals, or even if you're setting yourself milestones, when we hit it, we go, great, next. We don't actually spend the time to nearly give ourselves a little bit of credit for actually hitting the milestone.
Right.
So what I try and nearly do is tangibly reward myself whenever I do hit a milestone.
Yes.
Now, I have a lot of shoes.
Ice cream.
Or ice cream. Mm. I have a lot of shoes.
Totally agree
I love
with you. Reward.
I love. Yeah, and because it keeps
I'm
you
doing
going.
A lot of the stuff in this thing.
See, there you go.
I'm doing a lot of things.
You
agree
could have
with,
written the book.
I agree with this thing of, well, I do think about this subject a lot.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in performance.
Yeah.
And what I mean by performance is the way we perform. I try to perform at our best at what we do. How do you get the best out of yourself?
Yeah.
How do you try and go, you know, how do I be at my best in on a given night?
And that doesn't matter who you are. Like, you, it's not about professional rugby players.
Yeah.
It's about maybe you being in your local drama society.
Correct.
And wanting to go out in front of 50 people in the audience and give your
blowing
best.
Blowing them away.
So, to me, like, it's universal. The kind of skills. And
it's,
sometimes people think, oh no, that's not for me. Sure, who am I to be trying to get better and improve and develop? Well, no, actually, you're perfectly entitled to.
Yeah, little wins and rewards.
Yeah.
Okay.
So purpose, like
consistency. Consistency was the other word. And I remember actually working with a personal trainer, very good personal trainer, and he's brilliant. And Dominic Munley is his name. Actually,
oh yeah, I know Dominic.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. And but he is some very good. He's very well read as well. But one of his things would be, he's, for years and years, he saw guys in gyms, guys and girls coming to gyms and blowing their head off. They're going for too much, right? They're overlifting, they're overperforming, they're wrecked, right? They do this session and they just blow it out of the water and then they can't come in for another 3 or 4 days. He says, tick, 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 box, 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 tick that box, get in, be consistent. Yeah. Oh, 365 days in the year. Can you make it to the gym 220 days?
Yeah.
That's the guy or the girl that's going to win because they've been there every day coming in.
Showing up.
Showing up. That's an American term. Mm. Showing up is an American term. It's just be there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I feel like shit. I've got a hangover. I've got a flu. My hair's standing up on edge. Show up. You won't believe when you show up how better than you think it will go.
Because often thinking about something is always worse than actually doing it.
You're catastrophizing.
Yeah. So one of the things actually, one of the exercises that I have it in the book, but I feel like, you know, it's in the book. But what I use is a 5 minute rule, right? So no matter what I need to do, if I'm procrastinating or I'm really just demotivated, I'm like, just do 5 minutes of it. And you're giving yourself permission then to stop after five minutes.
That's nice.
But kind of what ends up happening is, well, if you're going out for the walk, by the time you've put on all the gear and like, which I'm out now, or you're at the gym session, or you've started doing the taxi, you're like, sure, I may as well keep going.
Love it.
So, but it's almost like tricking your brain.
It is.
So it doesn't seem like then this big, huge, insurmountable thing. It's like, just 5 minutes.
We're complex characters, humans, and we need tricking sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah, we're complicated. We go around trying to fool ourselves the whole time. So we need to be, we need to play, we need to almost fool ourselves into doing that stuff.
Yeah.
Challenge and kindness. Mm. Kindness. What did you say about, what do you think about kindness?
Look, it's a word that's bandied around a lot, isn't it? Hashtag be kind.
Yeah.
You see it, you know, printed across people's t-shirts and on their bios. Mm. But actually, when it comes down to it, are we really kind?
Mm.
You know, often, you know, and look, I'm not talking about the gossiping and all that comes. Like everyone does that, you know, and everyone does that in the privacy of their WhatsApp groups or in their own homes. But like, what does actually being kind mean?
Mm.
And first of all, it starts with yourself. We're not in any way kind or compassionate to ourselves so much. We, like you were saying earlier on about being your own best friend, like we'll be lovely to everybody else and then we are so horrible to ourselves. How we speak to ourselves, how we look at ourselves, we tear ourselves apart in front of the mirror.
We loathe ourselves.
Yeah, we do.
And there's a lot of self-loathing.
And often even go back to exercise. How many people exercise as a form of punishment because they've overindulged in the ham and pineapple pizza?
Right. Good point.
Or because, but actually, like
joy.
You exercise because you should be wanting to make yourself feel good and actually so you can get out of a car, you know, when you're 80 unaided.
Yes.
And it's actually stop using exercise as a form of punishment.
Yeah.
And often we only exercise when we want to lose weight.
I like that. I think that idea.
So it's like, no, like there's so much more to it. And if you don't like the exercise you're doing, find a different exercise.
Yes.
There's lots of exercise. Hula hoop around your kitchen if you want
it.
That's really good for you.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think, like that. It's small things like that.
Yes.
We need to start changing the narrative. You know, that kind of American change the narrative. But we do.
Yeah.
We need to start catching ourselves when we're being really crap to ourselves. Going, hang on, I wouldn't speak to anyone else like this. So why am I speaking to myself? And then we wonder why we're demotivated to step outside of our comfort zone.
Because it's punishment.
Yeah, and we're terrified.
Why would you want to punish yourself?
We're terrified of the voice, what the voice will say to us in our own heads if we if we come up short.
And Irish people are supremely positioned to punish themselves for overindulging.
Mm-hmm.
We come from a Catholic country and we're just there on the treadmill. Sorry, Father. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, I'm sorry for that 15th Kit Kat. Jesus, Hagen Dazs, I'm sorry. Oh, Jesus.
But think about the holiday that you go on. You know, often people will train for weeks and then inverted commas be good in the lead up to the holiday and then they're away for 10 days and my God, all inclusive, they make the absolute most of it and the trousers won't tie and the play home and then the self-loathing starts and you do it all over again. It's like, well, and I remember even saying to somebody before, like, I train when I'm on holidays, right? And it's not so
I
that I can look forward to the, or that I've earned the food.
It is because you love it.
And I know, and more more even than that, Mary, because I know it makes me feel good.
It
and it might be only 15 minutes, but I know it makes me feel good.
Releases the endorphins in your body, and that is an amazing thing for all of us to. Do you plan a year yourself? How, like, just give me a simple answer here.
Mm.
In relation to your ambition and your planning and in relation to your goals and what, you know, you want to do for a year. Do you go, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of January or anything like that, but I have done it. But I'm a big fan of writing down a couple of things that I want to do and doing my best to try and do them. But do you go, how do you do it? Do you go, this year I want to do this, this and this? Or do you, how do you do it? How do you set your goals?
Yeah, I'm not into New Year's resolutions either. I'm actually more of a February person. I think January should just be about easing yourself into the year. And I don't buy into that, again, that pressure that comes from buying the gym membership and expecting
punishment
to be there 5 days a week in January and then you don't see the gym for the rest of the year. And it's all that negative connotations. But yeah, like there is things that I want to achieve in life. Like I want to become a better broadcaster and you know, to keep, I suppose, like that I'm on Ireland's Fittest Family and loving the countries there, and I'm really lucky to be on those shows because there's lots of other people that would be loving the opportunity to be on them. But getting better is great, and it definitely is an ambition. But, you know, I think in the last few years, life has kind of taught me that having a plan is great, but it doesn't necessarily mean things will go according to that plan. You know, what is it? Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. Isn't that the quote?
I remember Mike Tyson saying that. I don't know if he came up with it, but he definitely said,
but it's
everybody's
true.
Got a plan.
But it is. Yeah. There is a lot of truth in it. And I think, like, I've an almost 8-month-old baby boy, and I was a real organised, I'd love a plan. I'd love a to-do list. And I quickly realised, even with him, things, you know, you might be like, oh, I'm going to go here, there. And then, you know, he's upset or he's crying or he hasn't slept, and all of a sudden the plan goes out the window.
This is your husband?
Yeah. Him too.
Because he already said he was in bed lying beside you. She's getting up again to write a fucking book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he can have his moments as well. No, but largely you do have to kind of adapt and change plans. So plans are great and all, but I'm the type of person, you see, that if I have a plan and things don't go according to plan, that nearly makes me panic more. So I'm a bit more fluid now in my planning, and I don't necessarily set strict timelines to the plan.
Yeah. Can I tell you, I hope, because you've definitely, like, you've definitely got your spoke in here, and that's really good, and I'm loving hearing some of this stuff. But can I tell you another thing I learned in the last couple of years, which was a tough one for me to learn, but a good one.
Yeah.
And that was, I think you referred to it earlier on in the conversation. I had a thing when I was younger, and that was wanting to believe I was really, really so good at something that I didn't actually want to find out if I was that good by testing myself.
Mm-hmm.
So principle, people will understand when I say this, that they go, I was really good at English in school, right? So I could have got an A, but I didn't even try. That's why I got a B, but I would have got an A.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, that is a fatal thing to happen, right? Because I started out in my 20s after the leaving cert and all this, and after my 20s going through into my life, and I carried that attitude with me. And it was only somewhere in my mid 30s or something that I kind of copped on. I fell in love with what I was doing, and I went, I'm so in love with, and I respect and so in love with what I'm doing, that I'm prepared to give all of myself to it and not be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
So I want to find out if I'm an A or a B, but if I'm a B, it doesn't matter because I already love it enough and I'm not afraid. And that freedom has given me a lot of power to do comedy.
Yeah.
Because you need a lot of freedom to fail in comedy. And I have a lot to learn, but you need to do comedy and to do a lot of things in life, you need to actually fail. Because basically comedy starts out with two or three people in a room going, what about this kind of thing? And they fall off a cliff and everybody goes, Jesus Christ. Fucking Jesus. That's, no, yeah, great. Fuck's sake. That's a fucking brutal sketch. Yeah,
what about that guy?
Right? Or what do you think of my impression of Leo Varadkar? Oh, that's great, yeah. Jesus. Yeah, but you have to be able to fail.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to show it to people.
Yeah.
Because it's only, not only then can you show it to people, but you can improve, but something you say in a room is added to something else somebody says, and suddenly you've got a great idea.
Yeah. I'm not joking when I say this. I was going to say that earlier on, that exact thing. It's a protection mechanism. I'm convinced of it. Because if you push yourself to the point where you've thrown all your eggs in that basket and you go all in and you 100% commit, whether it's trying to make the team or going for the job, and you come up short, that is such a hard place to be in. To admit to the world, I wanted this and it didn't work out. And it is, it's really hard. That's why people don't do it. they don't commit all in to lose the weight. They don't commit all in to go for the dream job or for the dream relationship. They're so afraid. You know, they're so afraid that it won't work out. And then what? Because you kind of have to realise then, that was my dream and it didn't work out. But it's almost like saying then, well, so what? Get another dream. But wouldn't you rather know? Wouldn't you rather know that you've chased it and you've gone for it and it hasn't worked out than sit there and wonder when you're 80 years old going, I wonder, could I have done that? Could I have gone back to college at 40 and trained to be the teacher? Could I have travelled the world on my own? Like, I suppose my attitude, you asked me at the very beginning with that idea, like, what drives me is that idea of, why wouldn't I say yes to Dancing with the Stars or being a coach in Ireland's Fittest Family or trying to, you know, if it doesn't work out, yeah, it's bloody scary. But what's actually also scary is not having that courage to give it a go. And again, it was now that I'm a mum, I kind of want, you know, Ronan and if we ever had more kids, for them to kind of feel that they feed that off, they feed off that, that they can see, you know, me doing it. And they're like, yeah, because it's very hard to tell a child, sure, give it a go. And it then you is. Don't do it yourself.
No. Oh, yeah. Show them. Yeah. Show, not tell.
Yeah.
Show,
but
not
it is
tell.
It's a really scary place for people to be.
But yeah, you're exactly right. But I see those guys, let's say I love rugby. I was watching rugby on television, right? So I love watching the Irish rugby team and I enjoy the way they play rugby. I enjoy the culture within the team and I enjoy the way their culture sits within the Irish culture. I think Irish people respond really favourably to this bunch of guys and the girls as well, but the rugby culture, we're talking about the guys mainly, they're so successful at the moment, and people see them and they respond to them. There's something likeable about them, there's something hard working about them, there's something decent about them, and you see them after losing a game like to England and you see them liquidated on the pitch. They're shell-shocked. It's like, what the fuck just happened? Their dream is over. The Grand Slam is done. But within a few weeks, they're back and they're smiling again. So don't be afraid to go all in.
Yeah. And I love that. Go all in.
Go
and
all
in. I'm sure that they probably cried into a pint glass or, you know, a few cans and they were annoyed at themselves and things didn't go according to plan.
But it wasn't as bad as they thought it would be.
And they picked themselves back up again.
They did. They picked themselves back up again, you know.
And I just, I would love that for people, is just to kind of, you know, get out of your own way and say yes to something in 2024 that you actually want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And another word that, a word associated with what you've been talking about is a word, when you get older, you fall in love with the simplest of things that were there all your life and you never notice them. And one of them is, for me, is the word begin. The word begin is one of the most beautiful words in the English language and it has such power and very few of us do it. Begin. We talk about it. We say, I'd love to. I will. I'm going to. Very few of us begin. And you just mentioned it a few minutes ago. See how you feel after 5 minutes. Yeah. You'll keep doing it. Yeah. You know, begin. Just begin.
Yeah.
You know, take the pen up. Begin. You know, put the sneakers on. Begin.
Go on the Tinder date.
Go on the Tinder date. Begin. Just try it. Yeah. Begin, jump in, challenge yourself.
Because like that's, look, life can change in the blink of an eye and it can blindside us, right? And things can, you know, things can happen. But also, I kind of think things can also go well in life and things can turn out so much better than you could have ever anticipated. And I kind of think I would love people to feel that they have that right to explore what that looks like. Because I think there's too many people that we're so afraid of what people will think of us. We're so afraid of being seen to have the notions. We're so afraid of that. Well, now she's above her station. You know, she needs to come back down. And really what that is, that's nothing to do with you, like you said earlier. That's more about their projection about like how they feel about themselves.
Yeah.
So I really just think people shouldn't feel guilt about wanting to improve and wanting to be better. It's okay. Now, equally, if you don't want to improve, more power to you. If you want to stay where you are and you're content, fine. But it's, you know that, do you know what it's like? Do you know when you're in a work setting and somebody decides they want to start eating healthier and they bring in their own lunch and Joan's sitting beside you, she's like, we're going out for lunch. No, no, I have my own lunch. Oh, right. Oh, you've brought your own lunch and making all the rest of us feel bad. That person actually does feel bad. So they're trying to take you down with them and they're trying to derail you off whatever you're doing. So, you know, you, and that's where I was going back to having the people in your corner to go, no, you keep going, you know, and if you want to get healthier, get fitter, whatever you're doing, don't worry about her. Don't focus on Joan. Any Joan's out there, I'm sure you're lovely. But, you know, focus on what you're doing. And I think like that's and spending a bit of time and figuring out what you actually want to do. Is actually, it's a really valuable thing.
Yeah. Everything you're saying is as well leading to the idea that don't be afraid to succeed.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to be who you want to be. And all of that will be done through a process of loving yourself a bit more. And, God forbid, may lead to a place where you're enjoying yourself and you're happy. And of course, this is one of the central tenets of Catholicism that we're not really allowed to do. What are you doing? Do you know what I mean? You dirty thing, you. What? The next thing you'll be talking about, enjoying sex.
Enjoying compliments about yourself.
Animal, yeah.
That's not allowed.
You know, it's that idea, like, and it's that idea, it's, and it goes, that idea of sex as well, you know, that sex was seen as a function rather than a recreational activity.
Pleasure, yeah.
Ridiculous, you know. So there's an endemic feeling in Ireland of success.
Yeah.
Because success is in a sense a form of self-love, which we should never aspire to. Let's get rid of that.
And we do kind of roll the eyes at people that openly talk about their success. You know, that you know, especially often, you know, I have some American friends and they will talk about, like, even their failures. They'll talk about them as like a badge of honour. I had 3 failed businesses, but look at me now.
Yeah.
And they are so much more open stepping forward and actually talking about stuff
that
they're
culture,
good at.
That culture is very developed over there on that part of the world. The idea that they've made movies about it. The guy or the girl that their businesses go bum, tits up on Friday. They spend the whole weekend getting drunk and they have a new business on Monday. Literally, that's America.
But isn't it like, I don't know, is it a cultural thing here in Ireland or what? But look, we are so quick to talk about our weaknesses and we're so quick to talk about the stuff that we're not good at or, you know, that we come up short with. But if I was to actually ask people, have you ever talked to somebody or even said out loud what you're good at? Like, show your strengths. What makes you you?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like that idea of your USP. You know, like I worked in marketing for years in business, like the unique selling point of every product. Mm-hmm. Every person has got something as well that makes them unique and different. But often we don't want to, first of all, we don't acknowledge it. Second of all, we don't want to publicly admit it. Again, go back to what people, for fear of what people will say about us. But like, if you can't acknowledge what you're good at, chances are a lot of people mightn't even know it either. Maybe your boss doesn't know it. Maybe you're missing out on opportunities because you actually aren't willing to say, well, I'm actually really good at conflict resolution, or I'm really good at, you know, organising, or I'm really good at taking leadership, or whatever it is. We don't want to openly admit what we're good at for fear of the eye roll from the person beside us.
The eye roll, yeah.
This one again.
The eye roll and the side eye.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, we're not good at complimenting as well at each other. And the only time we compliment each other is when we're dead and the coffin is open and the wake is on and the fucking town come into the room to say how great you are. The town comes in. The fella who hated you from the moment he ever saw you, he comes in and he goes, I always liked him. He was a good man.
But did you tell him when he was alive?
No. Dead. Sandwich, please.
Yeah. but it's the truth.
It's true. Like, when we're dead, we do
but
it.
But it's the same with, think about artists, poets, songwriters.
Dead.
But it's, we appreciate them afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're only thinking, God, yeah, I wonder should we have let them know how good they actually were.
Are you asking
no.
to be let know, Anna? Are you doing it again, Anna?
Are you doing it again?
For more compliments to Anna while she's alive, please contact the Mario Rosenstock podcast. We're hoping that we can bring a statue to bear of Anna beside Phil Lynott in
My mother would never allow that.
And it'll just have Phil Lynott doing a little eye roll beside
her. Yeah. This one.
Oh, you're one again. Listen, Anna, I've so much enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you.
I talked to you about practically nothing that was on my list.
I know. I came in here not knowing, but my God.
And I'm glad because it went down a totally different road and it was all about motivation and being inside yourself and self-love and all that sort of stuff and imposter syndrome and getting things done and why you would do things and ambition and competitiveness and
I'm
all
that. I'm going to go to ground now and hide. I'm like, oh God, what are people going
to
say about the podcast?
So you have permission now to go home. You'll listen to this podcast in a week's time with a big bowl of ice cream, hating yourself.
Hiding under the stairs.
I'll tell you why, because there's a thing that happens after people do an interview like that. You get a little, sometimes I used to get it as well. You can get guilty after interviews.
Oh yeah.
You feel like you've been...
I'm going to have in the lift going down. Yeah, I won't even have left the building.
You can feel a bit guilty. Yeah, you can feel, I feel that. So don't worry about it. You feel when you've done interviews, I gave too much. What am I doing? Yeah. I feel a bit naked something.
I've said stuff there that I've never said. But it is, if I'm thinking it, it's important to say it because chances are somebody listening might be feeling the exact same.
You've said nothing. You've said nothing that isn't.
And ma'am, I haven't cursed, so we're all right. Well, not really.
That's fine. I did plenty of cursing for both of us. Listen, Anna Geary, thank you very much. Her book is called Anna's Game Plan. It's in all good bookshops now, is it, Anna?
Yeah, it sure is.
Thanks, Anna.
Thanks, Mario.
And my thanks to Anna Geary for coming on the Mario Rosenstock podcast. I really enjoyed that very engaging conversation with Anna. You can contact me directly, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. I read them all and I get back to most of them, as many of you already know. Thanks for keeping in touch. Thanks for engaging. And of course, any of your opinions, positive or constructive criticism, always welcome. Ideas for sketches, ideas for guests. And if you can, just tell one other person about this podcast. See you same time, same place next week. Thanks.